Armenians have struggled for a century now to win recognition and gain some semblance of justice for the atrocities committed in 1915 when the Ottoman government in what is now Turkey systematically wiped out an estimated 1.5 million people. Despite its scale and importance in the course of 20th century events, how much do people in this country know about it? In his latest book, Operation Nemesis, the assassination plot that avenged the Armenian genocide, Eric Boghossian surveys that long history of the Armenian people and delves into an understudied campaign that attempted to bring the architects of the genocide to some kind of justice. It's published by Little Brown and brings actor, playwright, novelist. What else have you done, Eric? Eric Boghossian, back to our show. Welcome back.
Thanks, Leonard.
President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has moved a commemoration of World War II Gallipoli campaign forward to April 24th to coincide with the events marking the centenary of the Armenian genocide. What do you think he's trying to do? What is he trying to achieve by doing that?
It's pretty obvious that he and the Turkish government in general does everything they can to divert attention away from this a very significant memorial right now, because this is the 100 years. So, yeah, it's political.
Well, the April 24th, 1915, was the start of the genocide. But weren't you also born on April 24th?
Yes, I was born on April
24th. You'll never forget that day.
When I was younger, I come from such an apolitical family that I didn't know of the significance of my birthday vis-a-vis the Armenians. But I came to know it, and I don't know. Now I know a lot more about all of it.
What happened on the 24th of April, 1915?
On April 24th, the evening of April 23rd, intellectuals, various leaders, anybody who had a political streak, or even pharmacists, doctors, lawyers, were rounded up in Constantinople, which is now Istanbul, and all over the country. But specifically in Constantinople, about 250 people were rounded up, and they were sent away to prisons, and most of them were murdered.
So that was the beginning of this?
We see it as the beginning. I think there were already incidents prior to this, but in a way it was clear that at this point the Ottoman government had made the decision to cross that Rubicon and really wipe out an entire people. They had already basically drafted all young Armenian men into the army, and they had already been disarmed, and numbers of them were being murdered off in the hinterlands. And then after this time, in the rest of the spring and the summer of 1915, villages were emptied of their people. The women, children, elderly people were marched into the desert, and they usually didn't survive. If they did survive, they made it to northern Syria, maybe, and then maybe were murdered there as well. There were very few survivors.
President Obama has issued statements on Armenian Remembrance Day and refers to Medz Yegern. What does that mean?
Medz Yegern is a term that was used by the Armenians up until the 60s when the term genocide became the most common term. Medz Yegern means you can't translate it exactly. It's great crime or great evil, if you can put the word crime and evil together.
He also called it, quote, one of the worst atrocities of the 20th century. He had called it genocide during the 2008 campaign, but now he doesn't. Is there an official reason why the word genocide is avoided?
The term genocide is a legal term, and the government of Turkey has decided that it does not want to admit to a systemic government-ordered destruction of these people.
But doesn't history say that that is exactly what happened? How can they
yeah,
deny
sure.
It?
I mean, it's now consensus that this happened. It was reported on continuously when it was happening in around 1915. The New York Times was covering it all the time. Yeah, there's no question of it. I mean, you only have to dip your big toe into the topic, and the violence is stunning. It's really unbelievable.
And yet top Turkish officials reacted angrily when Pope Francis and the European Parliament said the Turkish government should acknowledge that it was a genocide. Ankara even recalled its ambassador from the Holy See.
Yeah.
It's just the word genocide that seems to bother them, not the fact that 1.5 million people were killed, and not just Armenians, but mostly Armenians.
Yes, it was against not only Armenians, but the Armenians caught the brunt of it, and then
Greeks
were also either killed or moved
Assyrians.
Out. Yes, the Syriac Christians, we also call them Nestorians. They are very ancient Christian people. This was all part of a plan, a political plan, that was to Turkify this Ottoman Empire, make it all Turks, which is it's basically a fascist idea that the Young Turks had, or some of the Young Turks had.
These days, Turkey is contending with another ethnic division involving the Kurds. Were the Kurds also in?
The Kurds were always there, but the Kurds are Muslim. And at the time of the beginning of the Republic of Turkey in 1923, the Kurds were told that they weren't actually Kurds. They were mountain Turks, and they should just get with the program and be Turks. Eventually, this has resulted in an ongoing war between Turkey and the Kurdish people ever since.
My guest is Eric Boghossian, an actor, playwright, and novelist, and the author now of a work of nonfiction called Operation Nemesis, the assassination plot that avenged the Armenian genocide. It's published by Little Brown. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. So what was Operation Nemesis?
Operation Nemesis was a conspiracy that was run out of New England and New York State, Connecticut, around this area. A group of small businessmen in this area, along with some politically oriented former members of the ARF, the Armenian Revolutionary Federation, they decided that they had to avenge the Armenian genocide. They recruited some men who were very familiar with arms and using weapons and had even killed before, and they sent them all over Europe to track down, hunt down, and kill these former Turkish leaders, and they successfully did so. They assassinated at least six important Turkish leaders, pretty much wiped out the whole Turkish government of the genocide.
How long had the genocide lasted, and how long after that did this operation go into effect?
They were almost overlapping. The actual beginning of the genocide is 1915, 1916, when most of the people are being moved out. However, there were still vast numbers of people as refugees who got pushed and hunted and continued to die all the way through 1919. This thing got actually officially started in 1919 in the tiny Republic of Armenia, and then these other guys here in the United States carried the ball. So they were operating in 1921 and 1922, and then they were told to wrap it up.
The name Operation Nemesis makes it sound highly organized. How planned was it?
Oh, it was very planned. Just as the genocide itself had within its structure denial was part of its original planning, the Operation Nemesis leaders wanted their key guy, Sogaman Tetlerian, who assassinated Talat Pasha, they wanted him to be arrested because they wanted there to be a big, flashy court case in Berlin, and there was. And this brought a lot of attention to what had happened to the Armenians. They wanted that to happen.
And you mentioned that it was based to some degree in the United States. Hadn't at least one of the masterminds of the operation, Shahan Natali, studied in the U.S.?
Oh, yeah. He went to Boston University. He was a theater guy. Many Armenians during this period are going back and forth to the old country to hear. In fact, my great-grandfather had come here in the 1890s, become an American citizen, went back to Turkey to get his family, and they caught him, and he died over there in the genocide. So there was always this attempt to come and go and do things out of the country, away from the Sultan, away from the political people, and that's how resistance groups and so forth could get fostered.
The First Republic of Armenia was declared 3 years after the killing began in May 1918. This is while the genocide is still going on. What involvement did the new Armenian government have in seeking revenge or justice?
The new Armenian government of this little tiny Republic of Armenia, before it became a Soviet republic for like 2 years, it was pretty much run by the Armenian Revolutionary Federation, and they, in secret meetings, decided to move forward with this act of revenge. They had a lot of things to think about at that time, but this was one of their major actions. They knew that it had to be ultra secret, and they put this man Armand Garo in charge of it. And then he recruited Shahan Natali, who was the guy on the ground who ran all the killers and so forth. It was a complex and multinational, multicontinental plot.
But there was no international organization they could have gone to try to get redress. Contemporary notions of human rights hadn't even developed, but didn't countries recognize some standards of conduct in war? The New York Times described some of the Turks as war criminals.
They not only described them as they were convicted war criminals in trials that happened in Constantinople in 1919, including most of the men who were gunned down by Nemesis, Talat Pasha, Enver Pasha, who was not killed by Nemesis but by others. These guys had been convicted in Turkish trials in Constantinople in 1919. The term crimes against humanity was coined by the Allies to describe what the Turks were doing to the Armenians. And then later, Raphael Lemkin, when he came up with the term genocide, he referred to what had happened to the Armenians as a prime example.
You said that this was partly a Islamic purification? This is...
In this case, I would say that the religious aspects were brought into play to achieve political ends. I think the political leaders were very callous in their use of the religious tensions between people.
Well, this was a time of crisis for the Ottoman Empire.
Yes.
First of all, it was falling apart. It was an alliance with Germany and the Austro-Hungarian Empire, so it wound up entering World War I on their side. But also it was a time when the monarchy was falling apart. You talked about the Young Turks.
Yeah.
Young Turks were a group that were opposed to the monarchy. They wanted to a modernized Turkey.
Well, yes. I mean, the Turks were very much the new Turks, the Young Turks, had their eye on what had been happening in Japan, the only country to successfully fight a European power in 1905. They saw Japan as a constitutional monarchy, and that's what they wanted to have in their country. There had been a constitution established in 1908, and the Sultan was losing, had less and less power. By the time you get to World War I, the Sultan is a figurehead, and they are in charge of everything.
So
and Talat is in charge of everything.
So if they want more democracy, why then commit a genocide?
Well, democracy works well in theory, and then when they actually put it into action, they found that all of a sudden they had all these disparate groups who didn't like that way of doing things. They liked the way things used to be. And it became, because the Armenians were really embracing this new way of Armand Garo, who was the ringleader, was a parliamentarian in the Turkish government. So they just eventually said, we have a problem. The problem is Armenians. Here's the answer. Let's just get rid of them. And that's what they ended up. But it was wartime, so it was hard for people to see what they were doing.
How large was the Ottoman Armenian population before the genocide began?
These numbers are hard to get at, but you'd got to figure it's about 2.5 million people.
So we're estimating 1.5 of them died.
Yeah, yeah.
The rest moved to California.
Well, sorry. Obviously they did. I mean, Saroyan is an example of that. They moved to. So you got me sounding all serious here, Leonard, and then you make me laugh, and you completely undercut me.
I'm sorry.
but no, many ended up in the small Republic of Armenia. Many ended up in the Levant, which is was Syria, Lebanon. These became huge. And there were always Armenians in Russia anyway, and later in France and the United States.
But we're saying about 2/3 of the Ottoman Armenians were killed.
I would say, yeah,
and
that's accurate.
First,
at least.
You mentioned they started off killing just the men.
Well, it was a great system. First, you basically recruit all the able-bodied young men, then you knock them off, then you get rid of all possible leaders of anybody who could lead an insurrection, and then you go after the hapless women, children. I mean, focus on just the notion of killing children. It is stunning. Some of the accounts from that period. Honestly, I've lived with this for 7 years, this book, and even toward the end, I could not digest the sadism and violence of these actions. It's very hard to wrap your mind around how this could have been done, but it seemed to be some idea that people had that if they could just get rid of all the Armenians, everything would be great. And that, of course, this was ridiculous. They actually hurt themselves. I mean, Armenians did so many significant and important things in their society that they had starvation because the crops weren't being brought in by the farmers, the factories were closing. It was terrible.
My guest is Eric Boghossian. His book, Operation Nemesis, The Assassination Plot That Avenged the Armenian Genocide, is published by Little Brown. We'll take a little break, and when we come back, we'll talk about the assassinations. Stay with us. We're back with Eric Boghossian. His book, this is your first work of nonfiction?
Yes.
Operation Nemesis, The Assassination Plot That Avenged the Armenian Genocide. It's published by Little Brown. Didn't you originally think of this as a possible novel or a screenplay?
I want to do something about Armenian experience, Armenian genocide. I heard the story only of Sogomon Tetlerian, who was acquitted after killing Talat Pasha. And his whole story was that he had been on this deportation caravan and he had seen his whole family murdered, and thus he was motivated to kill Talat. That was all he told. He never told the whole story in court. All I got was the courtroom story, so I was going to write a screenplay about him, and I thought this was a no-brainer. I would show him under all this duress in the desert and the killing and then the court thing. Obvious movie. But the minute I started doing any kind of real research, I sort of fell down this rabbit hole and learned about Operation Nemesis, which was this, wait a minute, there was a, it operated out of Massachusetts, agents all over Europe, and...
Well, how did he get involved in it? He wasn't in Massachusetts.
No, he had gotten recruited because he had gunned down an Armenian trader in Constantinople. Right at the end of the war, he just felt that he needed to do this. And the leaders of the conspiracy heard about this guy, and they brought him to Boston, and they looked him over because they needed a guy who would look good in court because they knew he was going to get arrested. And this man is a beautiful man, and they knew he was willing to do it, and he could pull the trigger. So then they recruited him and sent him back. He was an agent.
And he was tried and acquitted, as you said.
Yes.
Had he defended himself, or what was his defense?
Well, he just always stuck to the story that he had been on one of these death caravans when, in fact, he hadn't. He had seen his whole family murdered. And when he saw Talat walking down the street in Berlin 5 years later, and theoretically he was an engineering student at this time, that he was compelled to kill him. In fact, his mother had come to him in a dream and told him he had to kill. And so he stuck to that story in court.
And this took place in Germany. Now, Germany and the Ottoman Empire had been allies in the Quadruple Alliance. You would have thought that the bias would be toward the Turks.
Well, in fact, at this point in the war, they are still working out the peace treaties in Lausanne. And in fact, the Germans were perfectly happy to throw as many darts at the Turks as they could. And certainly regarding the Armenian atrocities, they did not want to get blamed for that. And in fact, they were part of it. So the case actually served German purposes as well and allowed them to paint the Turks with a black brush.
And you mentioned that the Times covered this story. They had a headline. They simply had to let him go.
Yeah. I mean, it was when he told his story in court and saying he saw his mother beheaded right before him, who could blame him? It would be like if after World War II, a Jew saw Hitler and, well, it would be impossible, but Hitler and Himmler and Goering walked and chose to gun them down, you wouldn't be able to blame them. And that was exactly the way people looked at it.
And the man he killed, Talat Pasha, had been one of the leaders of the Young Turks. When I hear the phrase Young Turks, I usually think of Kemal Ataturk. Was he even a figure in the movement at that point?
Oh, yeah. He was more of a junior figure. He was a very important general. And at this point, as this is actually happening, he is continuing to fight the Allies in Asia Minor and eventually succeeds in establishing the Republic of Turkey.
Hadn't the Turkish government condemned Talat Pasha to death in July 1919?
They did. That not only Talat Pasha, but a number of others. However,
because he was a Young Turk?
No, because of these crimes. They were well aware that Talat Pasha had organized the Armenian Genocide. You got to understand that in 1919, there's no secret about the Armenian Genocide. It's only after the Republic of Turkey is established that it becomes the cause of the Turkish government to try to erase this huge crime.
The British government had announced an intention to hold Talat Pasha to account. Did they act on it?
Well, they wanted to run trials, and Turkey objected, and so the trials were run by Turkey. And so they actually had arrested all these guys. Well, Talat they didn't arrest because Talat took off. As soon as the war ended,
he ran to Germany.
He ran to Germany. Enver ran. A whole number of them ran. A number of them were assassinated who took off. So they were in hiding. They were waiting for Kemal Ataturk to finish the war, and then they could all come back and go back to business as usual running this new Republic of Turkey.
How many former Ottoman officials were eventually tracked down as part of the Operation Nemesis?
The key significant people who were gunned down, number six, but there were their associates also, bodyguards, people like that, who were also killed. So the number isn't exact, but I would say six significant characters, including the Grand Vizier, including Jamal Pasha, who was another important member of the triumvirate. And then the person that they didn't get was Enver Pasha, who was at that time in Russia, in the Soviet Union. And the Soviets got tired of him, and they hunted him down, and they killed him.
It took a long time to track down many of the Nazi war criminals. Was it easier to find these guys?
I mean, the Armenians were people who had been living in Turkey. They spoke Turkish. When you go to a place like Rome or Berlin and expats are hanging out, it doesn't take you too long to figure out where the Turks are hanging out. So they would go to coffee shops and they would sort of sit at the next table and listen in. And they put clues together and they just started to figure out who everybody was. They had photographs they would look at to remember what these men looked like.
We've been getting calls from Turkish Americans who say that this is one-sided, even racist fiction. The Turkish side is being left out.
Well, I went through a great deal of effort putting this book together to try to look at it both sides. I worked with historians, and I actually, when I went into the project, I said, I'm not sure I'm going to use the word genocide because I'm not sure that this wasn't just massacres. It took a couple of years, but I was absolutely convinced of what this happened. And I would recommend that they read the book. I tried. I went to sources outside Armenian and American sources so that I could find things that were indisputable in terms of what people had seen and what had happened. Of course, the Turkish government has just spent the last 70 or so years spending millions of dollars educating their people in a completely parallel universe of history that doesn't include the Armenian, doesn't even include the Armenians. I mean, you can go into if you go into a Turkish historical archaeological museum, there will be no mention of the Armenians, none. And they've been there for thousands of years.
When certain prominent Turks have mentioned the genocide, like the Nobel Prize winning author Orhan Pamuk, they suffered consequences.
There were court cases against Orhan Pamuk and others. Today, the government has not been choosing to go after people that way. They go after it in a more subtle way. They are now currently using the same techniques as the tobacco industry or the anti-global warming industry, where they try to sow this notion that there is some sort of debate. There is no debate, just like there was no debate about cigarettes causing cancer.
What happened when the Bolshevik Revolution began in 1917? What impact did that have on the genocide, and what impact did that have on Armenians?
Well, it was a huge impact. The Russians had always, the Russians and the Turks had shared a border for centuries, and the border kept moving back and forth. So territories that the Armenians lived in could be in Russia or Turkey at different times. The minute that the revolution, when the revolution was moving forward in Russia, eventually Russia decided that they needed to focus on what was going on in Russia, and they pulled out of the war in 1917. That meant all the soldiers left that region, and it kind of left the Armenians hanging.
Armenia right now is not a pure democracy, the former Soviet Republic. And it's having it has border conflicts with its neighbors. Is the Armenian Revolutionary Federation that you mentioned, ARF, is that still in existence?
Oh, it's still in existence. They have seats in parliament. They are a political party in Armenia today, and they also have diasporic. They have people, especially in the United States, they are not today. They've sort of morphed into not just a political party, but a cultural group. And they try to bring attention to the genocide and just basically support Armenian culture.
Eric Boghossian's book is Operation Nemesis, the assassination plot that avenged the Armenian genocide. You quote journalist Philip Gurevich as saying when he wrote about the Rwandan genocide, genocide, after all, is an exercise in community building.
Yes. Well, clearly when genocide happens, it is some kind of planning is going on. We are going to get rid of these people so that these other people can live here or thrive in the same region. Of course, the classic, which was happening around this time, was in getting rid of indigenous people, whether it was in Africa or in the United States West. Get rid of them, and then you can put railroads through and farms.
In fact, since the Pope's statement, some have noted that Germany killed 65,000 Herero people in what's now Namibia.
Yes.
You mentioned what happened in the West.
Yeah. I quote von Trotha in the book because what was done in Namibia was just as horrific. The reason that we focus on the Armenian genocide is because it was a government action against its own people. This is something to really look at. It's a horrific thing. The Armenians had never hurt anybody in this country. There were a few fringe groups operating, but most of these people who were killed were just peaceful farmers and pretty much serfs, and they just killed them all.
President Clinton has apologized for not having done more during the Rwandan genocide. In fact, the UN was pretty much paralyzed. What happened during the Armenian genocide? The world was aware of it, as you say. The New York Times was covering it. In fact, the Times ran a headline in August 1915, Armenians are sent to perish in the desert. Turks accused of plan to exterminate whole population.
Yeah.
Did nobody
respond? Well, they couldn't cross the borders of the war prevented any real action on the part of the Allies. Where it gets interesting is right after the war, because this is a hinge period for the exploration of petroleum. And around 1922, the United States and its allies decided to sort of let it all be forgotten because they had much more interesting things to do regarding oil in Mesopotamia, Iraq, this region, which had all been Ottoman before. They wanted to get that ball rolling, and they didn't want to keep irritating the Turks with this talk about Armenian atrocities.
The British as well, because David Lloyd George, the British Prime Minister from 1916 to 1922, and, or I'm not 100% sure about this, Winston Churchill referred to the slaughter of the Armenians as a Holocaust.
Well, they would use this terminology when it was politically expedient, but in the end of the day, the prize for the British was, first of all, they already had Persia, but Mesopotamia was really key. One of the really interesting things about World War I is that when I was growing up, all they ever talked about was Europe, France and Germany and trench warfare and dogfights. But the big prize was south of what we call Turkey today, which we call Iraq. And there was a lot of oil there, and in Saudi Arabia and so forth. And Britain, the United States, Germany, they all knew that oil was there and they wanted to get it.
Comparisons are often made with the Holocaust, and Hitler at least is alleged to have referred to the Armenian genocide to argue that the Nazi slaughter of Jews would go unnoticed. There's no way to know. But could a strong international reaction against the Armenian genocide have prevented atrocities that followed?
Oh, I think so. I think for sure. I think because Hitler was, of course, German, he was a veteran of World War I. He had friends who had been stationed in Turkey during World War I, and they could just see it. It was a very clear example. It was a lesson, which was, you can do this, and you know what? No one's going to do anything about it.
What are the relations between Turkey and Armenia today? Are
well,
they friendly?
Today they're not very good at all because we're in the thick of this centennial. They have been sort of stasis. Today it's been sort of hanging there. The big headache for Turkey and Armenia today is Azerbaijan, which Turkey feels it's related to or is actually the same country. They think in their minds it's the same place. And Armenia is essentially at war with Azerbaijan. So there becomes this your enemy is my enemy thing, and it's tremendously tense. There is a closed border between Armenia and Turkey today.
To some degree, there's a religious component even today.
Well, there's no getting away from the fact that you have a Christian people completely surrounded by Muslim countries. But these become kind of markers for the people. I'm not going to say they're arbitrary, but they... Or, you know, communities are identify with a religion and then they become that community and then you give them enough arms and they fight with each other. I mean, Turks, Armenians, people of this region, they share so many things to begin with culturally. And to think that you can tell that there's a difference, even the notion of a Turk is almost a fiction because Turks were a people from Central Asia who invaded the region about 1,000 years ago, and there's very little evidence that they're even there anymore. This is a multicultural, multifarious society with all sorts of people in it, Christians, Jews, Armenians, Turks, Muslims. They're all there blended together, and it's these wars and these political events that cause the separation. Otherwise, they deal with each other, and they trade, and they live together.
But eat that's the same story. Food.
That's the story of the Middle East today, and it's a sad story.
Eric Boghossian will be giving a talk and signing books tonight at 7 at the Union Square Barnes & Noble store. Then this Thursday at 7 at Book Court in Brooklyn, as well as on May 6th at 7:30 at the Penn World Voices Festival panel. For ticket information, go to our show page at WNYC.org. His book, Operation Nemesis, The Assassination Plot That Avenged the Armenian Genocide, it's published by Little Brown. Eric, it's always a pleasure to have you on our show.
It's always a pleasure to be here, Leonard. Thank you.